You are listening to the Global Sales Leader Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Cooper. This week is all about innovation, creativity, and looking at different ways that you can actually have a little bit more critical thinking when it comes to approaching and nurturing different ideas about connection, relationships, and so much more with your clients and with your business and your business services. Absolutely mastered this. I'm speaking today with Drew Boyd. He's an award-winning LinkedIn learner. He's done over 20 courses, but he's also good. He's also a professor as well. So he's got an eclectic background and he's come from the air from the marketing teams of the likes of Johnson & Johnson and so many more. So you're going to love this. It's going to bring slight difference to how you think. Going. Hello, good morning, good evening, and good afternoon, and wherever you are in this wide, wonderful, beautiful world that we live in, you are very welcome to the Global Sales Leader Podcast. Every week, I speak to phenomenal guests from the areas of sales, psychology, marketing, tech, with a feel in and around the area of sales, because I believe that everyone's in sales from one way or another. But I just like a different take on it with every person I speak to. And without further ado, I got Drew Boyd with me today for the second time. And I'm delighted to speak to him for the second time because I learned twice as much, which is always really beneficial to me. So you're very welcome.
Thanks. Thanks, Jason. Always glad to be here.
Awesome. Now, a bit of synopsis about you. You're a global leader in creativity and innovation, international public speaker, award-winning author, and innovation blogger. Plus, another string to your bow, you're a professor, which is really cool. How did you do that? How did you get up to there? That's really good.
So it's a great question. I have actually a long career in the corporate world. And I was very fortunate at the end of my corporate days to have a wonderful relationship with the University of Cincinnati. I had done some teaching as an adjunct for them. And lo and behold, they had a full-time professor opening and they called me and they said that they had already voted me in. and so I was thrilled. I sort of knew it was coming, but it was always, it's always a thrill. And to make the leap, you know, from the corporate world to the academic world, I'm finding is somewhat unusual because I'm not your traditional academic. You know, I didn't start off in the academic world. And it's been a very nice gig. And I've been there over 10 years now. I'll probably be there another 10 years. I mean, it's really blooming for me.
I would suggest, and this is what I would probably take on it, you've got a more of a practical approach to the academia, meaning like you've seen it, experienced it. You were with Johnson & Johnson for many years as a director of marketing mastery at Johnson & Johnson's, according to your website. Anyway, that's what I'm reading. That's your words. Tell me about that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Students crave real world experience. And so when you've worked in the corporate world, you've worked with a lot of young people, you've hired a lot of MBAs, you've managed a lot of people in various stages of their career. And it's fun to be able now at this point to be able to tell them things that I wish I knew when I was at that career point, right? So, and it's the legacy, right? It's the generativity. It's the idea of giving back to the next generation. But business acumen and business maturity are so, so important for these young people. And that's kind of what I focus on. I tell them stuff that no one else will tell them, but they have to hear.
I think that's so important. It's Marshall Goldsmith also does that. You probably know of him. He actually feeds forward. So he feeds the information from his huge wealth of experience like yourself, but you give a gift back, which you based in a narrative and a story based on your own experiences. And giving that back as a legacy is just so very important. I think there's also Zig Ziglar did that as well, is gave back all of his knowledge and all of his know-how and understanding that. And I think that's absolutely phenomenal. And to actually get through to that is absolutely incredible. So I can see why you're a professor there. And again, I think it's all about relationships and probably how you've mastered that over the years. And I'm curious, how do you do it?
Well, I'm a big believer in frameworks and tools. You know, I like cognitive tools that that give your mind structure. And so when I teach, it's a blend of, you know, here are tools that are going to help you do your job well. Oh, and by the way, not everybody's going to appreciate your idea. Here's how you need to work the system too. You can't just run in with and be the smartest guy in the room. Nobody wants you to be the smartest guy in the room, even if you are the smartest guy in the room. And so I tell my students, look, you're going to get so much further ahead in your career and have such a satisfying experience if you learn how to integrate the ideas of others into your own ideas. I think the mistake I made early on is, you know, I thought I was the smartest guy and my ideas were better than anybody else's. And even if they were, I was missing the point that at the end of the day, you get better ideas when you take your idea and fold it and mold it and wrap it around with others. You become somebody that is so valuable and so respected if you do that. And but it means you have to, you think you're compromising on the quality of your idea when in fact you're not. And that's where the maturity issue comes in. So that's what I put my students through constantly. And I observe them and tell them and say, what have you done to get input from other people? What have you done to improve the quality of your idea through other people? And don't be this lone wolf performer who thinks they've got all the answers. You're just not going to survive.
No, that ego that holds them down and cements them on the floor, where you should be going collaborating and talking with others and sharing that dialogue, and then giving people your ideas and suggestions. Go, well, this is what I think. What do you think based on my experience and my idea on that? And there's probably a little bit of design thinking in there, because that's I like the way you can remodel ideas on design thinking. I think that's quite clever, but I love that approach. And I think that's, and again, it's building relationships with your peers to make everyone learn and grow, which I think is phenomenal.
I get complaints from students when I put them in a group project and they go, well, you know, Drew, I hate group projects. And I said, well, welcome to the world of work, because if you think you're going to have a job where you're not working with others, you're mistaken. And yes, it can be frustrating unless you learn to manage that frustration and learn how to harness it and bring everybody's, float all the boats in the harbor, so to speak. Yeah. This is what companies value today, is those people. The lone wolves is a thing of the past. Especially globally. Oh my gosh. If you think you can succeed, and Jason, I'll give you a quick story. I remember a group of younger marketers in the medical device business when I was in it. They were sitting in a room working with a product. And I said, what are you guys up to? And they said, well, we're working on getting this product to launch in India. And I said, okay. Now, we're sitting in Cincinnati, Ohio. And sitting around the table were six white young male guys. And I looked and I said, now, have any of you been to India? Well, two of them raised their hand, and one said, you know, I was in Mumbai once, and one was in Delhi. I said, have you ever been out to the interior of India? Well, obviously no. And I said, do you see how short-sighted you are not to have somebody from India in your meeting right now? Absolutely. And they made the classic mistake of thinking what they do in the U.S. will apply to other markets, without taking advantage of diverse thinking and local thinking. It's critical. You'll burn out if you don't embrace that.
I think that's absolutely on the money there, because you really got to understand the local market. And to second guess what you think might actually happen is just absolutely madness. You have to go over there and experience it, or get the people
that have that on the ground experience. And there's plenty, of diversity around. You just have to hunt and find the right person that we're going to fit in and gel within your group. But maybe another idea of personality types don't necessarily have to be exactly the same personality types. Some people are introverts, some people are extroverts, some people think on critical thinking, some people think on creative thinking. So having all those in a group, I think that's phenomenal because you get different ideas from different avenues.
Yeah, and there's been some very good work and models done. Of course, Myers-Briggs was the sort of the original idea of personality types, but others have come out since then. Yeah. The so-called DISC profile, which I like a lot, and others that help people be more self-aware. You know, I liken it to sometimes I'll go to a global meeting. I'm leaving for Amsterdam this weekend, for example. And in that meeting, I may be the only American in the room out of 100 people. Mm-hmm. And so people say, well, what's it like, you know, to be the only American in the room? And I say, you know, it's really weird. You really have to find out what it means to be an American.
Yeah.
Or if you're a person from France, you need to understand first what it means to be, you know, your own culture before you understand others. Yeah. And that goes hand in hand with working in teams and those relationships that you know, speak so much about on this wonderful podcast. I look back and I think about a book that a good friend of mine, an old colleague named Jane Horan, wrote a book called I Wish I Had Known That Earlier in My Career. And it's chock full of these kinds of ideas. And her one of her other books was called Now It Is Clear. And it's what it is. It's Jane looking back on all the things that now are clear to her, especially about the relationships with other people in the workplace.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely phenomenal. I'm doing some work with Google at the moment, and it is connection. And like all of my team is in the US, so I have to wait until later on to actually speak with people. But I also got to understand from everyone's point of view and listen intently. And I think that's all part of that bonding relationship and discussion of ideas. And I think, how can we, look, this is the Global Sales Leadership Podcast, so I have to make loosely around the area of sales. Look, I'm probably jumping around a little bit because that's probably how my creative brain actually works, is you've done a whole load of stuff in around the area of marketing, critical thinking inside the box, and other eclectic ranges of ideas, innovation as well. So how can we push this back forward to in the business of sales and marketing? How can we push all the innovation? How can we make salespeople even more ideas focused and thinking on their feet a little bit better than they do nowadays?
Well, there are distinct behaviors that can be trained, and I've trained them to salespeople, so I know it's possible. The behavior. Yeah, let me share some of those. So one of the key ideas of creative thinking, Jason, is that creativity is nothing more than just combining things. In fact, that's a direct quote from none other than Steve Jobs, and he wasn't the first. It's been recognized for, I wouldn't say thousands of years, but you know, for a long time, creativity was well recognized, but not the mechanism inside the brain. And this is what it is. It's when two unrelated things suddenly come together. And so if you want to be a more creative and critical thinker, you have to get used to the idea of putting two things together that at first will seem very weird. And so a salesperson who, like a lot of professions, engineering, marketing, they learn structures and they think, you know, I've got to stay within the structure, and it's all about the structure. Well, that's true, but if you also bring elements from near, right around your environment, things that you hadn't considered before that were sort of out of sight, out of mind, but right there at your disposal, you can all of a sudden turn something into a creative act. So let's talk in examples, not abstractions here. Let me see if I can make something up on the fly here. A sales rep, let's say a pharmaceutical sales rep who spends time in doctor's offices, and now is going in and sitting in waiting rooms, which they do a lot. Now, is there a way for them to be more creative in the use of that time and how they plan the call or how they work with other staff members in the doctor's office? In other words, we want them to not follow the script so tightly that they ignore and overlook these other resources of other patients, resources in the office, resources of other staff. In other words, how do we get them to think not outside the box, but right there and then and there inside the box to harness resources that are available to them? That makes them better. That makes them more creative, more fluid, more agile in their thinking. So that's how I would go about it. And I see good results from that.
So the behaviors behind that. So what are the behaviors behind that? Because I'm fascinated by how you perceive the world, but also what is the behaviors of the success traits behind that? So I'm always curious about success. And I know you're hugely curious. I know you've got a very curious mind and you're fanatical about it. And I just want to dig deeper about that because I'm always interested in behaviors of what makes people do stuff. So I'm throwing that back to you into a question. There was a question in there somewhere.
Yeah, you're good. Okay. Well, you know, if it's about behaviors, one of the other telling behaviors in the mind of creativity is what we call the principle of function follows form. And that's, of course, backwards from the normal way you hear that, right? Yeah. We hear the designer, the architect, they love to say form follows function. Yeah. But in fact, there's another way to use the brain. And here's what I mean by that. Most people think the way you innovate is you identify a problem and then you solve the problem. You go from the problem to the solution. Well, Jason, what if we turn that around 180 degrees and said, no, let's create solutions first and then work backwards to the problem that they solve? Now, that sounds crazy, but guess what? Humans are actually better at that than the other direction.
Yeah.
And let me see if I can prove that to you. Are you ready?
Yeah,
I'm gonna put you under something. I got to put you under a little pressure here, my friend.
Okay.
Here we go. Now, I want you and I want your listeners to imagine I'm holding in my hands a baby's milk bottle. This milk bottle changes color when the temperature of the milk changes.
Okay.
Now, quickly, tell me, Jason, why would that be a benefit? Shout it out.
Why would that be a benefit? Because you can know when the temperature is absolutely perfect for the baby to actually
perfect. Good. Okay, that's it. Now that just took you a few seconds of that to come up with, right?
Yeah.
Now what if, and I'm willing to bet your listeners came up with it too. You know, you won't burn the baby with milk that's too hot, for example.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, now let's turn the clock back. Let's do that again. But this time, what I'm going to say is, look, I'm going to say, hey, folks, we need to come up with a way on how not to give babies milk that is not ready for them. It's too hot. Okay, what if we did it that way? Jason, how long would it take you right now to come up with a color-changing milk bottle?
Yeah, probably take a little bit longer.
Yeah. A lot. Oh, yeah, you think?
Probably the neocortex.
A lot longer. Yep. A lot longer. And honestly, maybe never.
Yeah.
It's possible. So you have to see, you already have the ability fluidly to go from the benefit or rather the configuration back to the benefit. Color changing milk bottle back to baby safety. Much faster than if we had started with the problem and worked back to the solution. So a good creative thinker adopts both types of thinking and is able to see strange things around them or unusual circumstances and find a benefit that's there that maybe no one else is seeing.
I like that because you're using the brain in the right way as opposed to the wrong way. You're using the emotional part of the brain, the connectivity, and then you come up with ideas a lot quicker, which is, isn't it the neocortex? Was it the limbic system? I always get them around the wrong way, but it's the emotional part of the brain. Where the neocortex is the outer layer, then the limbic system is the emotion, the connection, the senses and the sensory experience. So I just jumped straight in there. So you got me straight away. And I came up with the idea. I love that. I'm going to use that.
Good, good. That's a powerful way to think. And so we call it function follows form, because you're creating the form first, color-changing milk bottle, and then finding the function it can perform. And design thinking is the opposite, which is also quite valid. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you should give up on problems to solve. There are plenty of problems to solve. Yeah. What I am saying is to be a great thinker, a really good creative thinker, is to adopt both directions of innovation, both directions of critical thinking.
So is there a name for that? Do you call it something? Is there a specific name you call it? Or is it just critical thinking and something else?
No, it goes by this principle that I mentioned, the principle of function follows form. And here's where it comes from. It comes from three psychologists. Their last names are Fink, Ward, and Smith, in one of their brilliant books called Creative Cognition. And in that book, what they describe, Jason, is this. The instant before you come up with an idea, the instant before you do, inside your head is sort of this undefined, fuzzy, globular form. Yeah. You're not sure what it is, but it's in there. And I wish your viewers could see my hand gestures like you can here. But what it is, you hold in your head this form, and then all of a sudden, it crosses over this threshold to turn into an idea. And what they call this is the pre-inventive form. You get a notion in your head, and then all of a sudden you make it into something valuable. Well, if you can do that systematically, what if you could learn to do that over and over and over again and put those pre-inventive forms in your head in a systematic, structured way, and then turn them into useful ideas? Man, you're an idea machine, and extremely valuable to any organization that is lucky enough to have you.
Wow, I love that. I've learned something new today from yourself, Mr. Boyd. I think that's incredible. And I can see where you've taken your 20-something LinkedIn courses, and every single one of them is slightly different, because that's how I originally found a little bit of knowledge about you. And I did a couple of your courses a couple of years ago, and I was surprised that I did them. And then I saw you, and I went, I'm going to have to chat to this guy. I think you're going to be fascinating, interesting. With the way I like and love to do these podcasts is trickle information back to people so we can learn and we can all grow. And if people take something out of these, I think we've done our job. Absolutely incredible. So, look, I know you've done several books, and I love the idea of in the box, inside the box. A friend of mine from the other side of the US, he was a mentor of mine, but he actually spoke about inside of the box thinking, inside of the box strategies. That's the first time I heard about it in 2016. But he actually did it by thinking of connecting a line between one point to another and then another point to the other. And that really intrigued me. So, which is leading on for me to actually purchase your book on proven strategies for creativity and breakthrough results, which is also going to be quite fascinating. So I can learn huge amounts from yourself. What are the key characteristics of those books? Because I'm really fascinated by the content and the context behind them.
Sure. So the book called Inside the Box is a book that describes the method known as systematic inventive thinking, or SIT. It's based on patterns. What's true is that for thousands of years, everyday inventors used patterns in their inventions, usually without even knowing it, without realizing it. And those patterns are now embedded into the products and services you see around you every day. Think of these patterns as the DNA of a product or service. Well, imagine if you had a way to extract that DNA and reapply it to anything that you want to innovate. And what's even more surprising about this book is that most inventions in the world can be explained by just a handful of patterns, five patterns to be exact. So that book describes it beautifully, and it's in, I'm proud of it. It's in 19 languages now around the world.
Wow.
It's been reprinted in several countries, including the U.S., including China. The second book was all about my journey from corporate life to the academic world, and it's called So You Want to Be a Professor. And there I give people detailed information about the steps they could follow too if they really wanted to get into a teaching role like I did.
Yeah.
But the third book is an interesting one. It is called Generating Prestige, or Adding Prestige to Your Portfolio. I almost forgot the title of the book, but it's adding prestige. Basically what it is, it's taking something and amplifying it to a more of a luxurious, prestigious level, whether it be a product, a service, a business model, an organization, an individual. And why you do that is that you want to own the premium end of a market. You don't want to fight at the discount level. If you have a choice, you try to own the premium, high price point, high performing product end. And this book describes beautifully how to do it by taking elements from the first book, Creativity Techniques, and then elements from the world of luxury and the code of luxury, and then combining them. The book itself is creative in the fact that it's mashed together these two models to give practitioners a useful framework for adding prestige to anything.
Love that. I love that. I think that's, I spoke with a guy called Roger Dooley a while back, and he spoke about the marketing and the brain and how that works. But it seems, I like that idea. I really love it. I think that's phenomenal. So they're always the standard textbook question, if you were interviewing you holistically, what would you say to yourself as an interviewing Drew Boyd to Drew Boyd? What are the wonderful questions you would ask yourself?
Yeah, that's a stumper, of course, because I guess one of the questions that comes to mind is one that people will ask me when I take on some new task. Like, for example, I in the last 5 years, I learned how to make acoustic guitars.
Wow.
And, you know, I was in my early 60s, right? And I'm learning how to make acoustic guitars. And so how do you do that? People want to know, how do you do that? Yeah. A skill that would, you know, take a long time to learn. And it doesn't matter whether it's acoustic guitars or it's the methods of luxury or some other topic. You know, what I encourage people to do is, I think what I've learned is go deep. You know, when you find your hot button, then be it, live it, join the tribe, find out what the community is, whatever it is. I don't care what it is. And dive deep into it. Go back and read the classic literature. Go back and study the research. Understand what I'll call the old ways. And don't get so enamored in the new ways yet until you really master the old ways. And so whether like podcasting, I started a podcast a couple years ago, and I really had to dive deep into the technology and, you know, getting it right, creating the brand, creating the theme, the content. I studied numerous courses, hired different consultants to help me. If I'm going to do something, my model is own it. Name it, claim it, own it, go deep on it. and don't just dabble at something. That's for me. Some people might like the dabbling across many things. But in my case, if you're interviewing Drew Boyd, this is my chief sort of characteristic that, it's the thing that defines me probably more than anything else.
So you're obsessive about things. Is that something?
Yeah, a little bit. I've never been called that, but Jason. Okay. Guilty. Guilty as charged.
Yeah, it just seems like you dig deep and you're obsessed about something and you have to learn everything about it until you master it. And I like that. I'm a little bit like that in some degrees. I know many years ago, I was working in the people tracking technology space. But in order for me to do it, I had to really stick them up on the walls and really understand, well, where do the wires connect? Why can't we do this easier? Why can't we have wireless connections between these? And they go, well, how come it's not connecting to the dashboard and all of that? And it can take you down a rabbit hole at points because you get too obsessed and sometimes you have to step out of the picture.
It can happen. There's no doubt it can happen. You can get into a rabbit hole and go, I'm out of my depth here. You need to know when to give it up. That is true. Let me think of an example where, you know, I started to go deep in something and I thought, you know, I just better back off a little bit. I've always been fascinated with electrical things. Yeah. And I think ever since when I went to college, I went to the United States Air Force Academy and I took a course in electrical engineering and nearly flunked it. I got a D. And I'm like, I don't accept that. And even to this day, 45 years later, I'm still trying to poke into it. And I, every so often I'll watch it, but it's not coming to me. Yeah. It just isn't. And when I hire an electrician, I'll say, now why, which way does the current flow? And so whatever it is, I have to know my limits. And so on all things electrical, I respect them. And I've acknowledged that I'm just not going to be a master on that. And I'm okay with it.
Oh, that's good. I'm just curious to know, actually, have you finished your guitar yet?
I've made numerous guitars in the last 5 years. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I finished one recently, a few weeks ago. And I make a steel string acoustic and classical guitars. Oh, wow. With my own, I have my own brand called Drew Boyd Guitars.
Wow! And
if people are interested, but if you don't mind, I don't just make guitars. What I do actually is I offer people what I call the guitar innovation experience, and what that is I will teach you over 2 days of private personal tutoring. How to think creatively. I'll teach you the method, but we're going to apply it to a guitar.
Wow.
In the hopes that, in the expectation that you will invent something for a guitar. I'm certain of it. And then I will take that invention of yours, build a handmade acoustic guitar with that invention inside and name it after you. And you will have a personalized and very rare and unique guitar with your own invention inside. That's the concept anyway of Drew Boyd Guitars.
Added touch to it, and I have to say it, and that's a string to your bow, another string to your bow with everything else that you have. So wrapping things up today. Look, it's been absolutely incredible and wonderful chatting to you. I can actually talk to you for hours and hours and hours. And I love
Thank
to
you.
And speak to you on other areas as well and explore what's going on inside your brain so we can all learn and we can all grow from yourself, because I think it's about giving forward and it's about tapping into people's knowledge like yourself, Drew. And I'm fascinated by how you do things. So I thank you once again.
Thank you.
And my pleasure. I really appreciate that. You've been All listening right. to Jason Cooper and Drew Boyd on the Global Sales Leadership Podcast. Every week we speak to phenomenal guests and every week we learn something new and interesting so you can apply it to your lives. You've been listening to the Global Sales Leader Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Cooper. I am the sales relationship coach. You can always find a lot more from me at jasoncooper.io. Or if you need to speak to me, you can email me at jcooper@jasoncooper.io. You can find out a lot more about the collective way I connect you with your clients to help them buy from you. This is how we teach and learn and grow, by using brain science, psychology, our behaviors to enable us to learn and grow and be better at what we do so you can connect with your clients better.
This is episode 50 of the Global Sales Leader Podcast. I know you're going to love. Thanks for listening to this one. I'm looking forward to the next 50 episodes.